All right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Jake Dunlap Show. We are very excited that you joined us. If you haven't tuned in, this is the show where we talk to celebrities, thought, and industry leaders to really discover their journey to success. I am super excited that you're joining us. This show is like no other. I can promise you that. You might laugh, you might cry, but you will definitely leave inspired and gain a whole new level of insight into those people that you follow, love, and admire. All right, welcome everyone to another episode of The Jake Dunlap Show. I am very excited today. Our guest today is a man of many stellar distinction. He's a New York Times, recognizes him as a best-selling author, obviously. Wall Street Journal calls him a top influencer on the web. Forbes says he's one of the top 10 marketers. An entrepreneur says he created one of the 100 most brilliant companies. No less than President Obama himself recognized him as a top 100 entrepreneur. He has helped Amazon, Microsoft, Airbnb, Google, Thomson Reuters, and literally I could just keep going, help to grow to where they are now. His blog generates over 4 million visitors per month. His podcast generates over 1 million listens per month. We'll get the Jake Dunlap Show there. YouTube channel has 31 million views. We are talking today to none other than Mr. Neil Patel. Neil, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
As I mentioned before, we're going to go back in time and go back to the early days and really kind of dive into, you know, your experience growing up and really what's helped to shape you now today as an entrepreneur. So we're going to start off born in London, right? But then very quickly, from what I understand, moved to Orange County, to La Palma.
Yeah, that's right. Small city in Orange County.
Well, that's solid. But you also had some family, right? Some influences that were, entrepreneurs or, you know, people around you that were starting your own businesses. So are there any, you know, think of like your early childhood, kind of pre-high school, like what are some of the big memories that you have around, you know, your parents, your uncles and other individuals? Do you remember them, you know, that entrepreneurship vibe or, you know, were you just playing with your sister? You know, what were some of the big memories you have from that stage?
More so around me, my uncles were doing business and making good money and my parents weren't. So then when I was younger, you know, you see them, families meeting up, playing with their kids, et cetera, your cousins technically. You're just like, huh, they do better than us. What's the difference? They do business, we don't. And I realized that if you create your own business, you can actually do much, much better. There's also some failures and licks that you may have to take because not all my uncle's deals were successful. But nonetheless, I saw that doing business didn't hurt.
Yeah. Do you remember, I don't know if it's maybe a get together, or do you remember like a few moments of when that like really stood out to you?
No.
You know, were there any kind of...
It wasn't any few moments. It's just as I was growing up, like you notice the difference. Your parents drive a Toyota Camry, they drive a Mercedes. You have a small house with no air conditioning. They have a bigger house with air conditioning, right? Like you start noticing a lot of those little things and it's just like, it really does, over time, it really did make me want a better life.
Yeah. So you basically saw that life and thought, okay, well, maybe this is something. And then obviously, as you get into high school, what was it for you, again, as you started to get into high school? And we'll go, I mean, you did a lot of different kind of, things to make money, let's put it that way. So what was it that made you want to kind of start that part of the journey? You know, what was it that for you, you're like, all right, well, I want to start to make some money now.
I wanted money, so I had a car. My parents gave me my sister's car. I believe it was a 98 Honda Civic. And I was driving it. And I was one of those Asian kids that wanted to soup up my car and make it super fast and furious. And he watches me just like, this would be so cool. And, had everything from a job at a theme park, which didn't pay much. And I was like, man, I just want to make more. So figured out how to create that side hustle, you know, or more so main hustle other than school, from, you know, getting, I think it's called seller's permit from the State Board of Equalization in Santa Ana, and being able to go to the same car shops that other kids would buy parts from, get a discount, sell it to them for more money. And doing a lot of little things like that really added up and just helped me generate more income, right? So did CDs, help people with their television sets, literally was open to anything as long as it, in essence, paid the bills.
And did you, and then I know that you, so you were doing a lot of these, again, like other endeavors. So again, I mean, that's pretty, and what age, were you like 16 when you go to the State Board of Equalization, 16 or so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think that that's like a very, yeah, very entrepreneurial mindset. Cause before that, like you said, I think you were at Knott's Berry Farms and some other areas. And then where's Quality Systems? Where does that come in? Which I know is another, you know, kind of endeavor around that time.
Yeah, it was a vacuum company. I was selling vacuums door to door. And they had this program during a summer. I saw it in the Penny Saver. I don't even know if Penny Saver still exists.
I don't know, man. Yeah.
And what I was doing is I was like, they had this ad. You could make, you know, six figures a year. I was like, wow, six figures a year. And then when I went to the interview, you know, they gave a demo on how you had to sell vacuums and you get paid a commission every time you sell one. And I was like, all right, let's do this, you know, and I would knock door to door and try to make money however I could. Sometimes I would just get paid cleaning people's carpet. I didn't care. Sometimes, you know, I would push hard for a sale. People are like, look, it's great. Can't afford it. I'm like, what are you talking about? You pay more for your cable TV every single month than this. What's more important, your TV or the health of your children? Like, I would push it on. I remember one time classic. I sold it to an Indian lady, and that was my first sale. And within a week or so, she refunded it or returned it and wanted her money back. So that sucked, but it is what it is.
And you remember that still, though. You remember like that. I have some moments like that in my sales career too, where a similar situation happens. But that doesn't obviously stop you, right? You, again, you're still kind of in high school trying to find it. And what time, I mean, again, like you'd built up some savings at this point, and then you started Advice Monkey. How old were you when you started Advice Monkey?
15 and a half. So I was doing some of these things at the same time. Because when I first started my job hunt, I couldn't find a high-paying job like that Microsoft or Oracle or any of those guys would give. But when I was searching the web on a site called Monster.com, saw they were making millions. I'm like, if I just make 1% of what they make, which would be over $1 million at the time, I'd be like, I would be rich. So I'm just going to copy them. And I didn't do well copying them.
But you tried, right? Like, what was it? You know, again, I guess as you saw them as like the leader. I remember that I actually worked at Career Builder, like, which was like those two were head to head, like, yeah, you know, years later. So it's a space that I know super, super well. So, you know, for that one in particular, like, what was it? I mean, had you ever, you know, done programming before, but what was it? I mean, what was the process of like getting that business? Cause I know you invested, you know, some of your own savings into it as well too.
Yeah, I went to a forum called Web Hosting Talk, which I don't even know if it exists anymore. And I went on there, found some developers, worked with them, and they popped up the site.
And so that's how it gets started. And then is that the role then where you start to work with, you had started kind of your first dabble into internet marketing?
Was I did, because I popped Monkey? The site, and I'm like, oh, everyone's going to come, and I'm going to be rich, and then no one came, and then I'm like, oh, I had to do some marketing, and I paid some people, got burnt, got no results, ran out of money, was frustrated, had to learn it on my own, got decent at it, and the site started getting good traffic, but then I was still making no money. Like, literally, I was making no money because I didn't realize it's because you have traffic, you got to convert them. Job board is a two-sided sale, the employers and the quote-unquote potential candidates. And I was just fed up. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go to college and get a degree and get a real job. So I started night classes when I was 16 at a community college called Cypress. One of my first ones classes was Speech 101, gave a speech on how Google works and how to get more traffic. And someone in there was a sales rep at a company called Alpac, who's like, hey, we're looking for someone like you. And keep in mind, back then, this kind of stuff was more rare, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
What year is this right now? Is this for context for everybody? Like, what year are we in?
Oh, what year? 2001.
Yeah.
Somewhere around 2001.
Yeah, so Google's just coming up. You're probably like using Web Crawler before that or something, or some of the other ones, Netscape.
And so, okay, so you start, so you're still going. So did you finish, I mean, how did you get your high school degree then to go to start to enroll, or could you do both?
No, I did both because I was 16, so yeah. I didn't finish high school yet either. But I was just doing both. And one of the guys in there introduced me to someone at his company. The guy was an engineer. Funny enough, he was the son of the father who owned the company. And he's like, yeah, we're looking to do what you do for our power supply manufacturer business. Paid me a few $100 an hour, technically less than $200 an hour, some $100 and something an hour back then. He hired me for 10 hours. I thought I was rolling in the dough. And he's like, hey, do you want to just do it for us every month? And he started me up at a few thousand a month and scaled me up to $5,000 a month. And that was a lot of money for a kid who's 16, like $5,000 a month. Even today, $5,000 a month's good money. And that's how I really got my start. And then they had a consultant who was also part of that company, and the consultant gave me more of his clients. And then next thing you know, added up. And then the owner, his other son owned an ad agency, and he's like, let me go sell like the Blue Cross and the Countrywide, which no longer exists. And he's just like an ING Direct and all these people. And he's like, well, yeah, we'll just give you a quote unquote cut. They would just charge more and give me a fraction of what they would get. I didn't care. I was making good money.
Yeah, and you're 16, 17 at this time.
And they ramped me up. And between the consultant and the other brother who owned that agency, got me enough business where I was doing around 20 a month.
Wow. And then, okay, because this is crazy, right? I think for most people at high school, it's like, yeah, like they get that job at Knott's Berry Farms and they're like, yeah, like this is good. Like this is just what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, high school. And then I'll get like my real job, you know, five or six years later. You know, and then I think you started your own Advantage Consulting Services, I think with your sister, I guess your sister's now husband. Is that whenever it started to ramp, like you started to get up to that level?
The 20 grand, you know, yeah, a month. Was when we started that and had a real business.
Yeah, and you're like, all right, I need to do this. And so are you still going to classes at this point? You're still like getting ready to finish high school, still going to Cyprus?
Yep, and I went to college as well, so I did both. It took me forever to graduate, 5.5 years. Didn't want to go to college. My parents wanted me to, so I just did it.
Right. So then you're like, all right, I'm just going to go do this thing. Let's talk. We can talk a little bit about that. So, all right. So from what I understand, so then you go to, it's Cal State Fullerton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what made you pick Cal State Fullerton? What was the logic there?
Close, easy school to get into. I scored way better than most of the kids that ever went to that school. I'm not trying to talk crash. It was just the reality. So because it's a state-based school, my assumption was is they couldn't fail like 50% of the students. And I started looking at some of their test scores and their numbers, and I was like, well, if I don't try and I don't read or do, you know, read any of the books or do anything, I'm probably still going to perform better than 50% of the students. So that's
so very calculated. That's a very, that's like, what do you, I mean, I think it's just a really interesting mindset. I mean, if, as you think about what you're thinking about in high school and how you're thinking about college compared to, I don't know, 97% of people, where do you like, again, what was a lot of this driven, Neil, off of, again, like just seeing a different path, or like, again, as you, I'm sure you've looked back and thought about this, like what is it you feel like really kind of re-engineered you to think of things, you know, in this way versus like your peers and everyone else around you?
Well, I was making money. All I cared for was money, and I was very motivated by it. So my thought process would change. And keep in mind, in high school, when I started making money, my grades also started going down too. I couldn't get into one of those great schools. You know, I had no chance to get into a Stanford or a Harvard or a Yale or even the USC's or UCLA's, which are easier to get.
Sure.
I had no chance to get into any of the top schools. There's just no way they would have accepted my grades. I went from getting straight A's to getting B's and C's, and I just wasn't quote unquote Ivy League material at that point. And my grades kept getting worse and worse as I started making more money, because I was like, screw this. You know, I'm like, I'm just going to go make money. I'm like, I'm supposed to go to school, then college to try to make money. And keep in mind, 20 grand a month was more than both my parents combined.
Yeah.
In income. So I was just like, so how is college going to help me?
How were your parents supportive? Were they, you know, during this time? I mean, obviously they wanted you to go to college, right?
Of the money, yes. Of the no college, no.
Yeah. So that they were okay with that. But then in their mind, I mean, in their mind, did they see this as like, oh, he's just like messing around, or, you know, he's
they liked it and they were all supportive of it.
All right, that's cool.
They didn't care for that job or anything like that. They're like, look, a college degree is just a backup.
Right, just in case. And so at what point do you start Crazy Egg? What point, like when, what year is that?
Ooh, I don't know the exact year. It was before 2010 for sure.
But you're at Cal State, right? You're at Cal State.
I was at Cal State Fullerton. And what I ended up learning throughout that process was we were doing marketing for companies and bigger companies. And some of them spend like $5, $6, $10 million on paid advertising. And they didn't track their ROI. They didn't know how to get more of ROI. So we created Crazy Egg to solve that problem.
Yeah. So you're again, because right now you're, like, you're on the agency side. And what was it? I mean, was it just like seeing the opportunity of a, you know, software play versus the consulting and the work that you all were doing?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I also hated consulting because the problem with consulting is it's hard to get clients. You can lose clients anytime. It doesn't matter when you have contracts. It's just, it was a shitty business for me to run. Too many ups and downs and not as much consistency. Although funny enough, you know, my current business that I spend all my time on is a consulting company called NP
Right.
Digital. And it's grown quite massive. I think we're getting close to like 500 employees and we're roughly 4 years old now.
Yeah, there's a lot, but there's a long path, right? Of especially like to, and I'm sure you learned a lot even probably from that experience, right? The early experience of the do's and don'ts and setting up processes and all of those things as well.
Yep.
So all right. So what are some of the, I mean, what else at school do you remember? You know, so you're obviously, you're starting a business. I understand. I mean, from what I see, you're working 60 hours a week still at college. You're traveling, you're attending over 50 conferences a year. What else do you remember about college? Like, is there anything else that really stands out to you? Any, you know, other things that you were interested in outside of just hustling?
No, and I wasn't at school enough to really get the quote unquote college experience. I did know that a lot of my teachers thought I was someone who wasn't going to do well in life just because I was barely there. Didn't put in much effort. I remember one of the teachers kicked me out of her class. I never would have guessed that in college. It was an English class, and I don't know why she started doing math problems, but I was correcting her as she was doing her you know, multiplication and addition and division. I was like, and she just got pissed. But it is what it is.
Yeah, because there's no like remote learning at this point, right? 2000.
Well, there were online classes, but the online classes still required you to go in person, you know, every once in a while. I'm like, this isn't truly right. Online, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, yeah, it would have been helpful if they had kind of what they have now as well. But while you're at college, again, what I think is interesting, again, is that you're named by Wall Street Journal as a, you know, a top web influencer. So how did that come about?
I was really big in social media marketing early on. Dig, Reddit, StumbleUpon, you know, leveraging Facebook, MySpace. Back then, you know, a lot of these sites were just coming around or popular. Like StumbleUpon got bought by eBay, right? Like no one would have guessed it was going to be a big company. Delicious was another one. I don't even know if Delicious still exists. But yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you're at school and these things are happening. I mean, for you, like, is there a point, or at what point, right? Cause you're still in school during this period. Then you start your first blog. That's also named, you know, like a top social media blog. You launch Quick Sprout, blog as well. Like, is there a point, at what point do you realize like you're different? Meaning like, at what point do you realize I have a different skill set than a vast majority of people who have been in marketing or, you know, been in various digital roles for a lot longer than I have?
I knew I was different when I was like 16.
What made you feel that?
People around my age focused on dating and social aspects, and all I cared to do was make money. So that opinion was just a little bit off, you know, not necessarily socially, but I was just a little bit off on how I was thinking and my thought process.
Yeah. And then at what point do you realize that you're, in terms of just knowledge base then, right? Cause again, you're still in your early 20s here. Very early. Like, do you realize like, man, I know more than most of these people. Obviously there's your English teacher, right? Who that's a whole other thing. But is there a point here where you realize again, like you're continuing to do these things, like you said, they're just different, like just different motivations where you would look at your peers or, you know, do any of these as like kind of accomplishments early in your career stand out as being like a never rest on your laurels type of moment, but a wow. Like, I think that there's like something different here and that I'm going to be much bigger maybe even than I thought I would. Or maybe you always thought that, hey, I'm going to be building these big companies and selling them or
I didn't think of anything like that. That wasn't part of the process. More so just try to do the best I could to make money and live a better life. I wanted to be rich, but there was no specific number.
Yeah. And you had to see yourself accelerating past people, right? Obviously if, you know, at that age you're making already, you know, 20K and now at this point, obviously with Crazy Egg, you know, that turns out to be wildly successful. And then you start Kiss Metrics.
Yeah. And Kiss Metrics, I was actually going to bring that up. Raise venture capital. It was in essence Crazy Egg 2.0. It didn't work out. We didn't hit mobile hard enough. Back then mobile was starting to become a big boom and doing software for mobile. And then the second thing that happened is we got an FTC investigation and a class action lawsuit over data privacy. And that caused all the potential buyers to not want to acquire the company and investors to not give any more money.
What was that experience? I mean, because you started this as I think it's like basically 2008, 2011. So again, you built Crazy Egg, with your partner. And, you know, you spend some, you know, you're investing quite a few years into Kiss Metrics. What were some of your big takeaways through that experience, you know, as you're, because again, you just, you know, kind of for everyone thinking out there, you know, this is 2008. I mean, this is right at the, you know, kind of economic, you know, meltdown time too. And you're starting this, you know, analytics organized focus on paid and tracking, you know, various types of media performance. And so what were those years like for you, you know, up to let's say the lawsuit or just kind of realizing it wasn't going to work? You know, what were some of your big takeaways there?
Yeah. My biggest takeaway is in business, no matter how hard you work, if you don't ride the trends that people are looking for, you don't have some luck on your side. A lot of times things don't work out. It doesn't matter how hard you try, how good you are executing your sales or whatever. Just some of the things just aren't in your control, like luck. Right. And I realized at that point, I remember Guy Kawasaki wrote a book called Art of the Start. And he really said, you know, it's like it was a statement like to get funding and do well in your company is something related to like you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning, you know, sitting in the bottom of a pool or something like that. And just generally speaking, you know, it's if you can have luck, that's great. The big thing that I ended up learning throughout my whole career, and it took me, almost, I would say 18 plus years to learn. And that was, if you want to do really well, it's not about how talented you are. It's about how talented your team is. And you got to hire rock stars. That's the biggest lesson I probably learned in my career.
And do you feel like, I mean, at Kiss, was that like the first, I guess, a glimpse of that? Or was it Crazy Egg?
No, neither. It was actually NP Digital is my fastest growing company by far. And I did start it later in the game and I had more going for me. But the big thing that really changed was I hired people who are rock stars and I paid an arm and a leg. And when I say they're rock stars, I hired people exactly from my competitors who are much bigger than me. Some of them are publicly traded and they're paying people an arm and a leg. And I took those same people who have not done it once. They've done it more than 2-3 times successfully before and hired them for the same exact role that I needed, right? That they did multiple times in their past successfully. That was the biggest lesson I learned probably as an entrepreneur. It was a hard one to learn. Logically, it makes sense, but you tell an entrepreneur, go pay that person, you know, well into the six mm-hmm. figures. Go pay that someone seven figures. Give them opportunity to make that much money. It's like, just doesn't happen. Like, people are like, yeah, sounds like I can get it done cheaper or whatnot. But
yeah,
a lot really happens when you hire people who just know what they're doing.
Well, I think it's also a mindset of like, you know, these are the people that, you know, who helped to build us from step. I see this a lot with entrepreneurs and companies, is they want to continue to reward. And it's not necessarily like misplaced, you know, the people that might've been the people that get you to 0 to 5 million, right? Or 5 to 15. But to your point, they've been there and done that a few times over, but they haven't been there and done it to 20 to 50 or 50 to 150 or whatever it is. And I think that's something I can relate to that too, as a mistake that I think I've made a couple of times in my career as well. And I think it's a really good lesson for anyone listening that it truly, you know, there's so many sayings out there, right? About, you know, you don't want to be the smartest person in the room. And like, there's, you know, it's like, well, you want to be a smart person in the room. But I think what you're saying around hire the people that have been there and done it. And the other thing, Neil, maybe you'll be surprised, maybe you had this epiphany, but I've also been surprised is like, it's also a little bit of a limiting belief that you can't hire those people. Like, oh, they might not take this much money, or they might not be interested in whatever. And I think that was something that I dealt with as well too, which was like, no, like these people are going to come work if we build an awesome thing.
Yep.
Yeah. And so as you're moving through this now, so you launched neilpatel.com and you can just start to see some of these like trends again, like you're getting into blogging, you know, relatively early. At what point did you realize Neil Patel is like a person versus Crazy Egg or Kiss Metrics? Again, you've been doing some blogs before. What point did you start to realize this idea of personal brand? Right. Like, was there a trend or something that you started to see? Cause no. we're like mid 2000s now.
Yeah. Because when I started doing Quick Sprout, I took on partners for it and that business didn't work out. And I just gave it to my brother-in-law. Funny enough, it eventually ended up working out for him. But when I was working on that business at the time, I just wanted a blog that was mine, that was a place where I could just go and write. And I had the domain name neilpatel.com at that time. I owned that domain later than I did QuickSprout. It took a while, but eventually I got a hold of it. And I just started blogging there. It wasn't to build a personal brand or anything. I just enjoyed blogging. That's all it was. And a personal brand was built, but there was no intention to build a personal brand.
Yeah. Well, what was the point then? I mean, I guess as you start to realize this, I mean, if you think about, like, I guess, what was it? Yeah, 2015, top 100 entrepreneur under the age of 30 by President Obama. You know, then I think it was what, 2016's maybe the first book, Hustle. You know, so then you start to continue to do some of these again, more recognition between like 2014,
but 2016. Wasn't trying to, right? Yeah. New York Times, yes, because I heard you can get more speaking fees if you're a New York Times bestseller. Didn't work for me, but probably worked for others. and then the Obama and all those, I was just like, might as well just apply for some of these awards, but it didn't really do much for my career, being honest. I'm not saying Obama's a bad president or anything. I'm just saying the war didn't do much for my career.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it and I'm honored. But it was more so what really changed my career as an entrepreneur was just hiring people who know what they're doing. And I'm not saying my past people that I hired didn't know what they're doing. It's more so I started spending more money on talent. And I started looking for people who did exactly what I was looking to do multiple times for a competitor in the past. Because it reduces the chance of failure. That was a big shift.
And was that, I mean, did that happen early? So 2017, fast forward, is when you start the agency.
Yep.
And what, like, again, like you said, it wasn't like, you know, necessarily the foresight back then. You know, was there like a moment or a hire or like an aha or a conversation where you're like, because I've had that where I'm like, I'm just not hiring people. I think for me, it's more of a breaking point. I just realized that it's just silly to continue to not do that. But do you remember a specific moment where you know, kind of that light switch turned on for you?
Yeah. So, I don't think there was a specific moment. It was more so I saw the results over time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then when you saw the results that you're looking for, eventually the moment hit or it materialized in my head and my thought process, but it just took a lot of time of just doing it and be like, okay, and rolling the dice.
And then you start to see a little bit of success. So there's probably like a intuition inclination that's like building in the background, right? It's like, I think there's something. And then like you start to like play with it. And you know, early on, is there a key hire that you remember? Is there a key hire, like in, you know, let's call it like 2017 ish, around like that era?
Key hire that changed your business was a guy named Nick Rochon, who we hired to head up sales. That was a big key hire. And he was really expensive. And we're just like, yeah, well, if it doesn't work, we can always can him. I know that sounds bad. It fails though, right?
Right.
And then another key hire was a guy named Jeff Johnson, who was a co-CEO of Covario, which sold for around $40, $50 million. And they were doing around 40 or so in revenue or something like that. And he had a lot of recognition in the industry, and he helped bring a lot more well-known people and he eventually bring in our CEO, Mike Gullickson, who ran a competitor that was doing, my guess is somewhere around $600-700 million a year in revenue. And that he helped bring many more good people as well.
How did you, I mean, this is interesting, right? Cause you're talking about these key hires that you're making, this is like your, I mean, you've had, I wouldn't just say three, I mean, you've had a lot of companies or organizations at this point, before the agency, a lot of founders, right. Or people who start it, right. It's called NP Digital. It's you. How did you start to realize, or, you know, how did you start to think about what your role was in the company? You know, you talked about hiring a CEO. You talked about some of these more strategic roles.
Well, I'm not an operations person. So I only focus on one thing, driving leads and traffic to our own website, which feeds the business, and then help with strategy for our customers because I enjoy it. I never was planning on running the business. Even from day one, I was never the CEO.
Interesting. And how, I mean, what do you think stops a lot of entrepreneurs from doing that? You know, is it self-awareness or what do you think it is? Because that's not, I don't think that that's a typical story, you know, of call it entrepreneurship, is understanding that and not being the CEO.
Yeah, it's not typical. But I've done enough businesses in the past where I know where I was weak, and I've always been weak on operations. So I don't do what. You know, I try not to be in roles that require operations or management. I'm a really amazing individual contributor. I'm a great contributor with a small team as well. I break once you start adding like 10, 15 people underneath me. I do really well with 4 or 5 people underneath me, and that's it.
That's really interesting. Again, I think a lot of people, I hope a lot of people listening to this kind of take this advice to heart, because what I see, and, you know, coming from scaling, you know, big sales and revenue engines, is so often I think people derive their, I don't want to call it self-worth, but, you know, their sense of accomplishment sometimes from the amount of people that they manage, right? Oh, I've managed 100-person team or a 200-person team. Now, it doesn't matter if this other person did it better with 25 people, And, you know, did you ever have those moments, I guess, you know, where you thought about the number of people, or like, what was it for you that made you like that? Cause that's pretty self-aware, Neil. I mean, I'm sure you kind of get that. Like, again, it's different. Like you said, and you knew that when you were 16, like, was there ever those moments where you felt that, where you're like, oh man, I should want to move into leadership, or I should want to do that. And either way, whether you felt it or not, how did you kind of, re-engineer how you viewed success?
I always view success as being satisfied in life, being content. From a financial aspect, or from a business aspect, I more so viewed it as, is your revenue and your profitability growing? I didn't ever really cared for titles. I always looked at the CEO as a shit job. Not because, you know, it's a great position, but who wants all that responsibility? I like living my life and not having to deal with a ton of people underneath me. I was just always self-aware in what I enjoyed and didn't enjoy in life. And I never felt that you had to do certain things to like be successful or anything like that. I just believe that you do what works for you, you know, whether that means you're going to be a millionaire or a billionaire, it doesn't matter. You figure out what works for you. Because also money, you know, I'm not filthy rich. I'm no Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and there's other entrepreneurs that are way more richer than me. And I'm nowhere near any of those people's levels. And I'm satisfied with life. I enjoy hanging out with my kids, right? We rescheduled this interview because my kid was afraid of a stranger, you know? And I'm okay with that. Like, ideally, I don't want them to be okay of a stranger. That's more COVID issues. But it's more so of, I'm okay being a father. I'm okay not going into office. I'm okay not being as successful because I get to see my kids grow up. I figured out what makes me happy in life, and that's what I do.
Whenever people ask you these questions, or they ask you about getting to that place, what advice do you typically give people? So, you know, as you're growing and scaling, I'm sure this is very common. I've heard you talk to about kind of flavors of this in the past, but when you hear other people that might be stuck, that might not quite view it that way, you know, are there ways that you've been able to successfully, you know, share experiences or, you know, have those conversations with entrepreneurs or, you know, companies that you've invested in or founders that you've talked to about engineering towards strengths, which I think is really what you've been able to do and kind of hold true, as opposed to, I think what happens is people might even have that, but then they make small sacrifices that lead them to go down paths. But what are some of the top, maybe again, experiences you've shared or pieces of, you know, feedback or advice that you've given to people who might be struggling with what you're talking about?
So it's two things. One is, over time through trial and error, you'll figure out what you're good at and what you like. And that's what you should just focus more on. You don't have to be the best at everything. Just be the best at what you enjoy and what you're really good at. If you're great at everything, it's unrealistic. It just doesn't really happen. You can't really hone in on your craft. And what you were taught when you're younger on be a jack of all trades is off, right? You know, it's just focus. People get paid who are really good at one specific thing for many industries. And the second thing is, learn from your mistakes. You know, when I was early in my career, I had revenue, but I didn't have tons of profit. And the reason being is I made so many mistakes. I didn't even have as much revenue as I could. And I kept making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And what's changed my life is I avoid making the same mistakes over and over again. You learn from it. You still make mistakes, but you're making new ones and you learn from it. And as long as you don't keep repeating the same ones, eventually it'll lead you down the path that you want to get to.
I love that because I think it's something that people can kind of look and reflect. And then, you know, and I think a lot of people, there is always a path forward, meaning sometimes I think people look at their current situation and it's like, well, I've created this world. And I had a coach a few years ago and he's like, you know, we went through the exercise of like, well, what if this happened and that happened and this happened, all those things that you think about, and you're like, everything would still be like pretty good. Like if all these doomsday scenarios of, you know, I think we like to think that we're as, you know, mission critical. But again, like to your point about how you've surrounded yourself with like the right team, you know, you're allowed to focus on what you're great at and they can do what they're great at. But if you're constantly making sacrifices, like you've said, then that becomes more difficult and that becomes, you know, becomes stuck, I think, sometimes people in their own business.
Yep.
So as we fast forward here, so again, agency has grown extremely, you know, rapidly. What have been some of your big learnings over the last 4 years from going from, you know, you and a group of people? So as a company scales at that velocity, you know, what are maybe the top kind of two or three takeaways that you've had around, you know, outside of maybe, if there are any additional points, maybe again, hire for the experience that stands out big time.
Yeah, that was number one for me.
Yeah.
Number two is you don't have to do things a conventional way just because you hire people who have experience and done really well. Their ways may have worked for the last 20, 30 years, but it doesn't mean you can't change things up and use technology or change how things were done to make it better. And the third one is this one's a little one silly. What's really important is time. Time really does help build great businesses. You just have to be patient, not give it 1 or 2 or 4 years, but you have to give it 10, 20 years.
And for you, I mean, you've scaled quickly, you know, you've scaled to, you know, hundreds of people at this point. How do you think about accelerating growth? You know, when you thought, and again, like you said, maybe these aren't the things that you're, you know, that are your decisions or strengths, but as you all started to see that and things moved, it sounds like, you know, maybe faster than you had anticipated. How did you think about the right triggers for growth versus, especially when you go raise venture capital, that's a whole other thing. It's like there's literally no other choice, but I still think a lot of people, it's like, I want to grow, I want more people, et cetera. Like whenever you were growing that quickly, how did you and the team stay grounded in growing, you know, intelligently as well too?
Just hire right people who have done it before. They figure it all out. Seriously, right? Like I didn't think about how to do it or how I can keep growing. Just hire people who have done it. They'll do it themselves and they'll show you how to do it and they'll bring on the people who can do it.
How have you scaled yourself, or have you really just never thought of it that way, right? If you think about these as your core skills, you've got a small team that reports to you. You know, how have you up-leveled or scaled yourself? I mean, again, it sounds like going back to this theme about I just hired people who have done it. Are there other things that you've thought about even in your own life and career that you've been focused on growth or, you know,
no,
areas that you're trying to grow?
I haven't really scaled myself. I wish I could say I did, but I'm not good at that. Never really did it. Have a great team around me who makes me better. Have learned from them quite a bit. I don't know everything either, even in marketing, right? So, but I haven't really scaled myself. That is always a breaking point, but you know, nothing's perfect in business.
Yeah. Well, you find the right operations people, they can do a good job of it for you, or the pieces of it that matter. And so Neil, as we start to wrap up here, you know, what is top of mind for you going forward? You know, and maybe we can talk a little bit about marketing and, you know, where you see the industry headed. What are some of the trends that as you look into 2022 that you're most excited about?
There's not a big marketing trend that I'm seeing other than omni-channel. You used to be able to build a business off of one channel, like Facebook built it through email invite, Dropbox grew through social sharing, right? You tweet and you get more space. Companies like Yelp grew through SEO and so did Pinterest. You know, it's just like, but these days people raise venture capital mainly for sales and marketing, and all good channels eventually get crowded and get competitive. And the only way to do well is you got to leverage them all. You know, that's a big trend that we're seeing going forward. It's not about SEO or paid advertising or anything. It's about building a good product, service, creating a solid brand, and leveraging all the channels to get your brand and messaging out there.
How do you then go back to, because this is what we hear too a lot in like the B2B side. How do you, I think a lot of marketers, it's, but I still feel like so many people are looking at that one-to-one attribution, right? Or what's the exact right, you know, second, third, fourth, final?
You can. We look at first touch attribution and last touch. So that gives us an idea of what's working and what's not.
So you're looking at first and last. And then how do you look at things like brand? You know, as a part of that mix, you know, brand or organic social.
You just had to spend on it. And it's a hard pill for people to swallow. But just think about it. If you wanted to buy basketball shoes, what brand would you pick?
Nike for me.
Okay. If you wanted to buy a car, what car would you buy?
Now, maybe I'd probably buy a new BMW.
Okay. Do you think you have to Google to figure out if you want to buy a BMW, or would you just go to BMW.com?
I'd probably go to BMW.com.
Power of brand. And it happens that way with many things. If you wanted to get a bottle of water, what bottle of water brand would you buy? Right? You pick one that you would know, like a Fiji or whatever it may be, or it could even be like a Kirkland Costco brand. Doesn't have to be a popular one.
Yeah. But
we make a lot of purchases based on brand recognition and cost as well, but you just got to spend on branding.
Yeah. And what do you feel like the breakdown? So this is going to be my last question. And I know that this is going to be like, it depends. Because I feel like this is where it, again, my domain expertise is more on the purely B2B, you know, and I feel like in B2B in particular, is there an underinvestment in brand? And it's almost like we're supposed to be boring and we're supposed to just do ebooks and blogs and white papers. For a B2B company, how much of your marketing budget? You know, and it could be like a range, but like, you know, just so people have some context.
I would say it depends on your size, but typically once you're generating millions and millions in revenue, you should be, and ideally millions in profit, you should just have a budget for brand. And when I look at a marketing, you know, eventually it'll be 10, 20% of your spend. And then eventually it may go to 30, 40% if you really get large. If you're a really massive company, you probably go to 50+%.
That's great, though. I mean, I think that's good for a lot of people out there to hear that even when you're not massive, spending 10 to 20%, because again, it's the snowball. It's the stuff that just starts working for you, you know? And I feel like that's the kind of the so focused on short term, you know, what did it generate this month, this quarter, that companies are continuing to lose sight of building things that are going to generate and pay off 6, 12, 24, 36 months down the road. So I think it's a great kind of quick litmus test. So Neil, I really appreciate you joining. There are so many really amazing takeaways in here about, you know, kind of your journey, the way that you thought about building companies and the success that you've had. I feel like that the theme here around surrounding yourself with the been there and done it people, I think is a message a lot of people need to hear who may be struggling or, you know, might be struggling with why isn't my company continuing to grow and scale. So many great insights. Really, really appreciate you carving out some time here to talk us through it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks again, Neil. And we'll see everyone next week on the Jake Dunlap Show.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to another extremely fun and interesting episode. I thought it was fun and interesting, so I hope you did too, of the Jake Dunlap Show. Really great, just breaking down everything that makes people who they are, the success, the trials and errors, and I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite platform, and make sure, more than anything, to go over to jakedunlap.com. That's where you're going to stay up to date on all the latest guests, additional details, prep notes. We're going to be sharing everything on jakedunlap.com. So go ahead, go over there. You can subscribe there as well, too, and we will see you next week on the Jake Dunlap Show.